Welcome back to Keeping Up With Data, the show where we dive deeper into all things data and AI across the Australian scene. I'm Pauline, and this is my colleague,
Sean, from the data team.
Yep. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome Ethan Smith to our episode. He's a lead AI researcher and co-founder at Leonardo AI, a company that's trailblazing this new frontier of text-to-image generation and computer vision. So firstly, welcome, Ethan. How are you?
Thank you for having me on. Really excited to be here.
Nice, man. Yeah, likewise, we're excited to have a guest like this on. Text image generation and computer vision is something we've not really delved into at all on this series. So we're keen to pick your brain on a few things, get to know Leo. But before we get into all of that, we'll just start with who Ethan Smith is and maybe a quick background on yourself, if you like.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, I'm Ethan. I'm lead research at Leonardo and co-founder. I got into the scene in early 2022, back when some of the very, very first text-to-image models were coming out. It was really, really kind of a low-key scene where pretty much you could barely even Google it. You had to pretty much know someone who was in a Discord who could invite you to this Discord. And everyone just went around sharing these kind of code snippets that you could run on this Google Colab notebooks. Sometimes like people like sold them through like Patreon and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it took some 40 minutes to an hour to generate like a single image.
Wow.
But nonetheless, it was like a whole cult following. It was just so much fun just trying to improve it and stuff like that. And just kind of searching all the things you could do. Mm-hmm. The original images looked absolutely like nonsense, but I was just so amazed that a computer understood what I meant.
Yeah.
So yeah. I had been in the middle of my junior year of college. Mm-hmm. I was on the pre-med track. But after kind of switching some colleges and kind of going through COVID, it looked like pre-med was less and less interesting and less kind of plausible for me.
Yeah.
Didn't want to have to really do so much more years of schooling. I was just ready to get out.
Yeah.
So I was a little aimless. And then, yeah, I kind of found this and that became my obsession for a while. I started blogging about it and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then our main founder reached out to me through the contact details I left on the blog and was like, hey, you wanna start something cool? And I didn't even really, I guess, know the full extent of what I was getting into.
Yeah.
I kind of just like yes-manned my way through it. And, but really, really glad I did.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I think even stepping back a little bit, I think Sean had a question about maybe just, what was it around?
I've got two yeah. questions. One that's just sprung to mind right now that could be a stupid question and maybe have a lot of reasoning towards what you guys do. Is there anything related to the text image generation to do with like the NFTs and the, you know, like the Bored Monkeys? Is there a similarity between that in any way?
In the early days, that's actually like kind of what I was getting a lot of requests for projects on.
Right.
Like I was running these notebooks and a lot of people just wanted help. So like, how do you even start a notebook? And a lot of people kind of in the NFT community wanted to like make 10,000 something NFTs or whatever. Mm-hmm. I got bored of those very quickly. I didn't really do a ton.
Yeah.
I think there is this kind of association between AI image generations and NFTs, but I think that's only because they've just, like, I don't know, the culture's kind of adopted it, but there's nothing inherently
image and
image. It's just I guess it's tool to end goal.
And the second one was, before we delve into the depths of Gen AI and image, all the whole shebang that Leonardo behind, for example, if my mother is listening to this back home, she's not going to have clue what Gen AI is or image text recognition. Could you break it down maybe in like layman's terms, Gen AI in simple form and like image text generating?
I almost feel like it's like, you know, you go and you type into Google and you all of a sudden you search something and you get all these results of things you want. Imagine it's like Google, except there are things that don't exist yet, they're being generated on the fly. Mm-hmm. So you say, oh, I want a monkey riding a banana or something like that, I don't know. it's extracted from the ether, just pulled out of thin air pretty much. The models you train concocted.
That's super interesting. I think that's probably the thing that people struggle with the most in terms of getting their head around, because they're like, yeah, you say that, but like, how does it know to,
yeah,
to actually create a monkey on a banana? Because I think Google's just using existing information that's out there and pointing you to a link, right? Whereas,
I guess it was a pretty like surface analogy. That's kind of how the experience looks like.
Yeah.
You can say it's like, oh, you search something and you get real results, or you search and you get the generated results, right?
Yeah.
What makes this work is these models that have seen pretty much millions, billions samples of data. And over time they learn, instead of just memorizing all the samples, they learn the rules of the data. And then when you request something new, you can extrapolate and figure out what you want pretty much.
That's awesome. It's like, I think it's so new to everyone that we're sort of getting our heads wrapped around it, but it does make sense when you sort of put into that sort of scale. But no, that's super interesting. And going back to that point around, you know, you had a pre-med background, but then you're always interested in sort of computer science and coding. Has this always been a lifelong passion for you, or was it a bit random?
No, this was like came out of nowhere. I was really into like psychology. I did some stuff with computers when I was younger. Like I ran like a Minecraft server, and back when I was like really young, I made like some Roblox games that went viral, but never got into really like coding. I took a coding course at some point in high school, and by the end of it, I was like, I'm never gonna do this again.
Yeah,
this is I don't like this.
Yeah,
and it was like very simple code too. It was like the kind of like block based coding. Mm-hmm. You like assemble Scratch or something like that.
Yep.
And yeah, I was just not rocking with it.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, like, I got into this like AI image generation stuff, and I was just so fascinated by how it worked.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's not a choice. I have to learn how this works.
Yeah.
I think it really kind of sparked kind of my joy with like psychology pretty much.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. That's always kind of been, I guess, like my main fascination. I'm just very kind of obsessed with the understanding of things going on behind the scenes, kind of, I guess. So when I saw that, like, I could put in a word and it could see, I could like visually see its comprehension of what that word means. I was like, this is almost kind of like the studies that people do over like years of trials on people, but it's like, you can just run this on a computer and it's like very hands-on. I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Even if I was waiting an hour for an image, that's, I guess, much shorter than the results of like a typical kind of research study.
Yeah.
So it was very engaging by nature. At that point I didn't have much code. I didn't have any coding knowledge.
Yeah.
And I think I really only kind of took math up until like some calculus stuff in university and some others. I pretty much just went down these kind of rabbit hole after rabbit hole trying to learn these things and just catch up on all the knowledge that I originally thought was boring.
Yeah.
It was like, it was really a lot like kind of searching through the dark.
Yeah.
I was like, where do I even start? Should I pop open textbooks?
Yeah.
Thankfully, there's a lot of people who just made really, really good, like, intuition, dumbed down, like, blogs on this thing.
Yeah.
And that kind of just let me get my foot in the door.
Mm-hmm.
And just cover, like that just let me figure out the things that I can ask the right questions, right?
Yeah.
Because before it was like, I don't even know how to speak this language.
Yeah.
Once kind of just getting my foot in the door, getting my feet wet with some things, I could slowly level myself up. It took a long time and just a lot of obsession.
Yeah.
And I still have so much more to cover. There's still so much I'm missing and really want to know more about.
Yeah.
Do you think we're just scratching the surface with it right now because it's so new to everybody? Or do you think it's like, where do you think it's going to go in the next couple of years from maybe a business value perspective? Like, to me, Pelayan's the AI expert here, so I might ask some more like dumbed down questions in a sense to help others, but right now it's text image generating. You can speak to a computer and it can give you the monkey on a banana, for example.
Yeah.
From a business perspective, like I'm thinking like you could do coloring books for kids. Very, very simple. But like where does it go from a trajectory perspective? Like where do you envision it?
I guess in the end use cases or what?
Maybe like from for you guys as a business.
Yeah.
The text image generation and it's like you can give advertisement, for example, to businesses at the click of a finger. Where is I wouldn't say the potential, but the limitations, and there's a lot of questions I have. I don't know how to maybe portray them in the best way, but like, you're scratching the surface right now and what can be done with it. So much more that you're going to find out with research and with all of this sort of stuff. But maybe from a business perspective, as like you guys selling a product to someone.
No, I think we're kind of in this like interesting transition phase for AI as a whole. We're like, I think the business model is like kind of tough. Like you concocted these models that are ultimately like, it's kind of in the way of like Google to some degree. It's hard to choose what you actually like get. Like you can search something and there's like biases, right? And maybe you can kind of like enforce more rules, but what you get is ultimately random. And people often want, in kind of design and generation, all these other things, will want very, very low level control, right? And there's kind of this balance between wanting control that is like very, very, very granular, but also not very like tough to use, right? Another thing is latency. Like that's being worked on is you know, what is the experience of kind of like generating an image and waiting a bit? I would say the experience right now is like kind of similar to working with like a designer or something like that. You know, you kind of describe what you want and then you kind of just keep refining until you really get something you landed on. I think increasingly though, there's going to be more deep and intricate kind of interfaces where you can like finally kind of paint with it and stuff like that. I would almost say like it would feel like a lot of the kind of traditional kind of ways people make art, especially digitally, but trying to rid kind of the tedious bits and really, really kind of like guess at the user's intent to, you know, I think the end goal, like kind of big future from now, is like cutting out kind of all the kind of physical maneuvers and buttons and stuff like that, and just kind of like beaming right into your mind. And it's like, you know, what do you want to do? Just think about it and bring that into reality.
Into the reality.
I think like, that's, I think in the end, well, that's where everything's at.
Like those Tesla chips that Elon's making, and then being able to sort of just look at a screen and then pull that.
No, totally.
That's both terrifying, but also exciting, I'll be honest. I suppose on that same point then, you know, when you're looking at the next frontier of Gen AI and where you guys are headed, what's been the biggest, or maybe just a challenge that you guys have faced in terms of, you know, refining the product or the research team and making sure that, you know, it's a top tier service?
I think it's kind of a similar struggle for everyone, is that like, you train these models and they come out and they're something of a random beast, right? They're a slot machine. And it's kind of just figuring out all the different edge cases, right? I think with like code and other kind of software, traditionally, the like logic it runs through is very, like it generally, like it's very deterministic, right? And you'll catch all these kind of like weird edge cases and stuff like that. And you can patch them, you can do whatever you need to kind of fix it up. But this is like, there's like an infinite space of like weird possibilities you could get. And you just need to like keep adjusting things or applying kind of scaffolding to guide towards the outputs you want and not the ones you don't. And there's a lot of different angles that can come from. That can come from kind of fine tuning or adjusting your model. That can come from kind of tricks at inference time or generation time, all with potentially trade-offs in speed and other stuff like that. I feel like it's like ultimately getting a slot machine, which feels like a very random thing to do what you want. I guess it's ultimately that. And I guess I think researching also kind of on the user experience itself, like how to make this something that is enjoyable. Something I think about a lot is that I've seen people equate image generation to the camera and kind of its disruptiveness to the field of art. Which I can agree to some degree. I think it does kind of change things, but I think right now, what you're kind of doing with models is just kind of like a lot of it is just mimicking reality, right? The models kind of just act as a mirror to what they've seen. They're just trying to make a convincing hallucination of something new, but kind of looks like everything else we've seen. Which, whether that's something novel and new or not, I guess is kind of up your interpretation. It's a bit of a tired debate. But I think where things will get interesting is when people lean into the medium and create something kind of entirely new ways to create. Like there's, you know, some kind of research papers on being able to guide a generation by kind of like dragging things around, or, you know, guiding movement in a video. Like these are entirely new ways to create, haven't been seen before, right?
Yeah.
I've seen people do kind of like 3D renditions of like 2D paintings and stuff like that, like almost like a 3D painting.
I've seen them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, cool. So yeah. Like there was a quote, there was something someone told me where basically back when the first film commercials came out, you had people who would basically just walk up to a camera and just recite a script. They were basically doing radio commercials, but now on camera. So I think that's kind of a similar phase of what's happening right now. Is it's like, okay, we got this new tool, and now we're just going to do all the things we currently do. But I think there's the few kind of pioneers that are like, okay, I got this new tool, and I'm going to do things that don't even exist right now, and bring things to entirely new levels.
Yeah. So absolutely, it's this new frontier, I suppose, that we're all sort of getting used to. And I suppose it's that next step, right, in that sort of creative landscape and how that will turn out. So
You said UI, user interface. Would designers like that have much of a purpose in Leonardo, like UX, UI designers?
I think so. I absolutely.
Do you think there'd be a big transition from maybe UX, UI designers into maybe that Gen AI image text generating?
Yes and no. I think you do want to have a strong kind of like underlying understanding of the ways you can kind of make these things move a bit. I think kind of having that can kind of guide your decision processes and stuff like that, and especially if you've created with it.
Curious ones will want to go over.
Yeah. But no, 100%. I think there's every day there's kind of like new ways of new ways of kind of interfacing with these things. I'm very interested to see where it goes.
Yeah. I think that sort of brings us to a topic that I was curious to get your opinion on, but just around, you know, the ethics around AI and sort of, you know, human creators and then the adoption of, you know, computers and AI and their influence on what new art we can generate. How does sort of, and I don't know how much information you can give, but how does Leo sort of approach those ethical questions, I suppose, around ownership and IP, etc.
For example, we're training a lot with like licensed data sets.
Yeah.
So things that are sourced from, you know, I guess companies who, you know, sell these data sets to us pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the main kind of way to address it.
Yeah.
In the future there might be some kind of interesting not necessarily for us. I've just heard this like as an idea in the field.
Yeah.
Like things like revenue share models, like kind of idea of, Spotify returns like, you know, cash to their artists and stuff like that. So basically, if you could see what people are generating and quantify kind of the ingredients that they came from, it stemmed from, you could do like a credit assignment to all the kind of people who contribute images and stuff like that. That's an interesting route. I don't know.
Yeah. No, definitely. I think, so we're hosting an event next year around AI ethics and governance and things like that. So it's always front of mind for a lot of our clients. And the Australian scene in particular tends to be very conservative when it comes to adopting new tools, tends to be slower than the US or Europe. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. Yeah. But that makes sense. Yeah.
Will copywriting come in? Like, obviously, you guys are building these cool images that no one has ever seen before. And it's like, whoa, that looks unbelievable.
Yeah.
We guys have like a trademark on it that's Leo's image and that can't be used in X, Y, and Z, or is it once it's published, it's anybody's?
From my understanding, from a legal standpoint, no generated images are copyrightable. I don't know if it's changed. I think that's the current verdict.
Okay.
Interesting space.
I don't know if it's different in Australia too. I think there was
We don't actually know, but no, it's interesting. I suppose going back to Leo, so 2009, was it early 22 is when you joined?
2022, yeah.
22, cool. And now it's a team of how many globally, like roughly?
130.
How does that sort of growth, maybe not impact culture, but how do you, you know, manage all these different moving pieces, especially when it's a global business? Like, how does that sort of work for you guys?
It was definitely an interesting start.
Yeah.
I can speak more to, I guess, my experience in the research team rather than, I think, kind of the global perspective on it. For me, it was pretty much, I was like, I think for a while I was like the one American on the team or something, or at least in kind of our scope. So this meant pretty much waking up at 3 to 4 p.m. and working till like 6 a.m. or something like that. Which was, I wasn't even really complaining about. Like, I'm pretty nocturnal in general. I gravitate towards that. So even being here right now in Australia is kind of like a culture shock to me. But yeah, I think it was working weird hours. And then we picked up some people kind of in like Europe and in America. And then it was like, okay, which time zone should I stick with? And we kind of had just a few people in each one, and there was still a lot of need for kind of communication in these days.
Yeah.
Going forward, it's wanting to, I guess, have these kind of squads across time zones and really have them like each kind of own a project, which I think is really the most logical way to handle these things.
Nice.
I think especially in research, trying to make sure there's kind of the least kind of bars and, you know, I guess kind of like bureaucratic frictions as possible is really important, and making sure that the ability to collaborate with the rest of your team is very, very smooth.
Yeah, definitely. So. You keep sort of touching on that point around research and like the team that you're sort of, I guess, in charge of or leading. It seems like Leo's a product sort of company, would you say, or like that's the offering that you guys deliver, but maybe there's a shift towards more of a research lab focus. Can you explain the thought process behind that and what you guys are maybe trying to achieve as well?
Yeah. So I'm very strongly under the belief that, like, if you consider yourself kind of an AI company, and I think really any company of this size and stuff like that now needs to be really thinking about AI. I've heard kind of the term of existential threat and stuff like that thrown around. You really need to be thinking about kind of the big picture of AI progress.
Yeah.
And even if, I guess, you're not kind of like very, very, very deep in the trenches, you need to be thinking about like, where is this all going? You know, how is this going to shape how I build kind of our future and stuff like that?
Yeah.
So I think it's being very proactive and making sure that we're standing kind of at the very frontier of these things. You know, I think if you're kind of working on like very an ensemble of a bunch of different like niche things, the people who are working on general intelligence may eventually surpass you. Historically, this has kind of been the case. You would train like a model for each kind of task, and then all of a sudden, kind of GPT came out, and it could learn things entirely in context. So, you know, if you're building product by product by product, and then all of a sudden someone comes out with this product that does everything. That's not a fun spot to be in, right?
No.
So yeah, ultimately, I think if you plan to stick around, you need to be thinking about the big picture of AI progress and research and staying on top of that as much as possible.
Absolutely. Okay, that's really cool. I suppose from that angle then, if I'm doing my PhD in AI or, you know, I want to step into this field, like similar to you, how you came from a different background or a non-traditional background, perhaps related to this area, like what's your tip for someone who's looking to do the same, I guess?
For doing a PhD in like computer science?
Computer science, computer vision, like they're just like, Leonardo's a really cool company or, you know, that sort of field interests me. Like, what should I sort of be doing to put myself in the best situation?
I think there's quite a few schools that are now like really kind of delivering very, very updated education with this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But a lot of it, you will need to seek out hands-out experience yourself.
Yeah.
Fortunately, like I said, there's a lot of people who are making kind of like YouTube videos, blogs, demos, sharing around these CoLab notebooks, which are basically kind of like ways you can kind of run code in a very kind of, I guess like block by block kind of way. And just hacking on it. I think there was no better way for me to learn than to just obsessively tinker.
Yeah. Apply yourself.
Yeah.
And, yeah, really search. Yeah, okay. That's interesting.
What backgrounds would you guys look for from researchers if you're looking to get like a green, someone who's, I love text image generation, or even someone who's gone in to do a UX UI degree and they're like, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to go to the next level of Gen AI. Mm-hmm. what sort of backgrounds would you?
Yeah, I mean, it depends a lot. I do still like to see, I guess, very kind of strong, you know, knowledge in the kind of foundations of things. Mm-hmm. But I think that's, I guess, yeah, that and kind of a lot of the like engineering side of things. Engineering is becoming very, very important, especially as you scale up these things. A lot of it's like, you know, I guess less and less kind of like dealing with having, you know, tons and tons of theory and stuff you need to like do and test, but more just like ultimately you got to run this thing across thousands of machines. You got to run your training across like thousands of machines, and you just need it to not break. And that gets trickier and trickier and trickier, right? So engineers are crucial. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I think, but yeah, I would like, I guess I'd like to make specific that this experience can come from anywhere. I think me, especially like saying, oh, you need to have a PhD, you need to have this, whatever, would be very hypocritical. So yeah, I think a lot of it is kind of this energy and spirit and curiosity, but yeah, I guess it's important that, some of that definitely is pre-existing. Like you've shown that you've dug into these things and you can understand them, but also kind of this adaptive nature that I will continue to adapt to the future.
Yeah.
And you know, seek these things out.
And yeah, I like that.
Infinite curiosity.
That's the key when I take away curiosity.
Curiosity, yeah.
Passion and energy. Yeah.
Definitely. This is always a question that I like to ask, but in terms of from when you started to where you are now, if you could go back in time and give yourself some advice, Ethan, what would you say to...
Give yourself some advice.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, yeah. What would you say to yourself back then?
Lots.
Yeah.
In what context?
Yeah, yeah, true.
I mean, it's like, it's advice, but it's also like, I don't feel bad that I didn't know it before. It was like, I just had to like experience things not working to, I guess, experience them now.
Yeah.
I feel like I wouldn't have taken it to heart if I was like just went back in time and told myself, I guess. You need to, I feel like, see it firsthand. And I guess my opinions are still kind of changing, but I think there's just some areas where I guess I didn't know as much code as I wanted, so I couldn't be as practical or things broke and learning about how to scale up the code base and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which I feel like fairly proficient now, but just had to go through that gauntlet, right?
Yeah. What's been the most exciting thing? I know we've asked you all the hard hitting questions, but what do you love about your job currently and how's it going?
Sell the vision to someone if people are listening here, and like we do have a lot of PhD researchers in Sydney, and obviously people may look at this podcast and say, God, Leo sound like a great company, want to work with these guys. What would be the
Exactly. Yeah. I think kind of the most exciting work was doing kind of our like foundational model. I think we started in a place where we didn't have resources that we didn't, I guess, even really think it would work so well. It was a crazy learning experience, and it came out the other side being better than we ever expected.
Yeah.
And there was just, I guess, so much to learn just training a model kind of from the ground up entirely and just seeing it kind of slowly learn and seeing that the things you tested, some failed, but the things that worked incredibly well. Going forward, we're looking to do a lot of kind of like, I guess, a mix of kind of more product research and a more kind of like foundational research.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, kind of in the bit on, I guess, thinking about the big picture of like AI progress and all this stuff like that, as much as we need to ultimately kind of turn things into products, doing things kind of on the foundational kind of research side and keeping in mind what drives the field of kind of AI progress forward, it's a very kind of give and take. There's like kind of this open source, and the benefit of putting things out in open source is just spurring the field more. You see what people do with the things you put out, and that's very insightful. You get more hands kind of just working on these things. The metaphor I like to use is that you have kind of these big tech companies with research, and they have a crap load of compute, right? And then you have the masses of millions that are playing with things kind of out in the open. And if research could be analogized to finding buried treasure on a beach, you have, I guess, people working with excavators, just digging out chunks of sand. And then you have the masses, each with a shovel. And there's a benefit to both, I think. Yeah. I think you know, you can take out these giant chunks one at a time, but the people who are thinking to search in areas maybe you didn't consider.
Yeah.
You have very, very broad search.
Nuts.
Okay. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. Well, look, I think we'll leave it at that. Firstly, thank you so much for that insight, Ethan. It's been really cool to get you on. Unless Sean has anything else to add, we're just going to...
We'll book in another one for 5 years' time.
Exactly. See where we're at. Yeah. And then you can give me the advice you'd give to yourself today from 5 years on and see how that progresses.
But, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. And thank you so much for coming on, mate. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Oh, good. This all can be chopped as end to where you like it. So.
Yeah, sweet.
Did we miss anything that you're like, shit, we need to say that because we can go back into the zone now and get it back in?
Oh, yeah. I guess on that last bit, I probably wanted to mention, well, I don't know if I should yet because we're still kind of constructing what that identity is.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I don't know yet. I guess I probably shouldn't say anything yet.
Well, I mean, we can say if you like to and then just cut it out if you can.
Sure.
If you can't, sorry.
Yeah, sure. I think I could probably, got a few more bullet points that
you want to squeeze in. All right, yeah.
Let's go back in.
Let's
lock
back in.
Yeah. What's the question you want us to ask? Because we can, this is like a staged question.
I guess something along the lines of like, what are your plans for future research? Mm-hmm. What are your plans for this kind of lab? What makes you different kind of thing? I don't know.
Yeah, there's two questions. What are your plans for the research lab and what makes you different?
Okay.
I think I'd have trouble answering what makes you different, but we can check it out. Right?
Yeah. Okay. Give it a shot and then.
Maybe go before we wrap up.
I just don't want to preemptively say something and then that doesn't turn out to be true.
Yeah.
So.
Cool. Well, look, before we wrap up as well, Ethan, I do want to ask about the future of the research lab and what you guys are planning. What does that look like?
Sure, yeah. So it's expanding the team greatly. Yeah. We're a considerably small team right now, but looking to get very, very like proper sized teams kind of in each time zone pretty much. Mm-hmm. Working across a diverse set of projects ranging from kind of foundational research into things all over the place, but then a lot kind of working on just foundational multimodal models and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. We're strong believers in that the future is kind of multimodal in and multimodal out. Mm-hmm. I think on the matter of figuring out kind of these interfaces and stuff like that, that's being able to have more ways to input and being able to get more ways to output. I think the kind of where this is kind of moving is seeing these models as having kind of like a general compute machine, like a general operating system.
Right.
You think of a computer as something that you can... You know, you put in inputs, you put in outputs, you can make this computer do things, but it happens through code. Mm-hmm. Now, this kind of optimal AI system is the thing that can do anything like a computer can do, but instead of typing code, you're speaking to it in plain English. So,
nice. And before I let you continue, when you say multimodal, can you maybe just give us
an explanation? So, images, texts, audios, pretty much like any data type, input type.
Cool.
And being able to have that come out on the other side as well.
Yeah.
The area, the space of image generation is kind of asymptoting a little bit in the sense that, at least for like just pure text image generation, like they're getting very, very, like very, very kind of understanding, and they understand how to create what you ask of it, and they're becoming incredibly lifelike. So really, kind of future games look like not creating necessarily one image, but maybe creating kind of many images with the kind of like consistent composition.
Nice.
Or multiple data types. You know, maybe it's interleaved kind of text, and maybe it's creating an article, maybe it's creating a cookbook. Mm-hmm. Just much more kind of complex, composed things with kind of a higher level of understanding.
Speech image comes into that. Like, that's kind of the way to, is that already there? Like, this text image generation, but is there now?
Like speech.
So you speak into the computer and say, I want you to create X, Y, and Z. Is that there now or is that where it's going?
You can even do that right now, probably with like, you can use the speech, like I guess like any speech program, speech to text program on your computer, and then map it to that. Mm-hmm. Although if I would say if you want to have something pick on up on the inflection of your voice and the tone of your voice and maybe like some kind of other emotion, that's not there yet. But yeah.
Oh wow, that'd be scary, eh? The inflection of your voice. You're like really angry. I want you to create this. The computer's stressing out. Okay. And then the final question as well. What makes you guys, I guess, different or unique to the other competitors in the same space?
We believe that a lot of kind of the competition right now is very, very firm kind of in the language model space, which is a very difficult space to compete in. It's something of a, I think it's something of a rat race a little bit. Mm-hmm. No disrespect. I just think that a lot of it is trying to scale things more and more and more. And you know, most games are coming from pretty much like, you know, crazy intricate scaling data work and just having kind of the most of everything. And I think there are like clear leaders in this space, but yeah, it's a difficult space to compete in.
Yeah.
And I think there's some that kind of address this by using more scaffolding, in the sense that maybe, you know, the models aren't as big, but you can use kind of like these external pieces, like external models or external kind of assisting scaffolds to like better guide into what you want it to do.
Yeah.
But I think we're looking to take kind of we're in an interesting phase where pretty much like, you know, we have the resources to make things happen. I think Australia is kind of this untapped space for really kind of taking the lead in AI here, and just looking into a lot of kind of grassroots kind of like foundations of, you know, like what have we, you know, if scale is the only answer, what have we been doing wrong at this point? And I think that's addressing it from a very fundamental level. I feel like I said one big trait is that to think about like multimodal in and multimodal out, it is complex to, you know, I think there's some complexity in that it's a lot more data as opposed to, I guess, like just lots and lots of text.
That's awesome, man. And yeah, just to touch on that final point, it's nice that it's an Australian business, right, that's also doing a lot of this development, because most of our audience is based here, so a lot of inspiration there going forward. But unless there's anything else, Sean, I'll I suppose I'll wrap it up and thank Ethan for coming on. I'm sure this will be a very interesting podcast for people to listen to. We're all new to this field, so yeah, I guess we'll see you again maybe in a few years, and you can come back on and go from there. Yeah,
this is great. This is great. Thanks for having me on.
Likewise. Thanks, mate.
Yeah.
Beauty.
Yeah.